Shalom Aleichem, Chevra. This is the National Council of Young Israel. We welcome Rebbe and all the Rabbanim that are on this call for conference call number 126. Thank you, Rebbe.
You're very welcome. Let's begin. Question one. Is it permissible to arm and disarm a home security system on Shabbos? For context, this is how the system works. To arm, you press one button on the keypad, it makes a tiny beep. To disarm, before opening the door, you're inside the house and want to leave, press four buttons on the keypad, four tiny beeps. If you open the door while the alarm is armed, you're outside in the house and want to go inside, the keypad emits a quiet tone before you disarm, up to 60 seconds, though rarely lasts longer than 2 seconds, so that you know it's armed and needs to be disarmed. Disarming is the same. Four buttons, four beeps. If you open the door while the alarm is armed and don't either enter the code in 60 seconds, the full siren blares, and the alarm company is notified. Does it make a difference if you arm this arm with a shinoi? Using one's pinky finger. Finally, if it is indeed forbidden, but one's parents insist on using it anyway, what should a teenager do? Simply stay inside the house or outside the house waiting for someone else to disarm the system? Or if the system is not armed, but in order to leave without disobeying one's parents, stay home so you don't have to arm? Or does keep it out of aim, outright, this assumed rabbinic prohibition? Very important question. We assume the halacha, you may not either create or destroy an electric circuit on Shabbos. Now, apparently the parents think it's okay, so he can go out and go in with them, which is what's suggested. That's the best thing. The question becomes, if that's impossible for whatever reason, what? So there's a big dispute about electric circuits. What's their status? The Chazon Ish is famous in saying it's a question of bone or soter, shalom b'daraisa, to either create or destroy an electric circuit. According to the Chazon Ish, there's very little to be done. Even if you'll say he'll use a pinky, it'll be b'shinui, so it's still awesome b'derabbanan. Nisim b'derabbanan is also a prohibition. It's hard to imagine any leniency whatsoever to arm or to disarm, according to the Chazon Ish. Rav Asher Weiss, Shlita, is similarly strict when it comes to making electric circuits, not based on bone of a soser, but rather based on makah b'patish, based upon a Yerushalmi. But there's a big difference between makah b'patish and bone. Because Bona has an opposite called Soser. Makah B'Patish has no opposite. And therefore, it seems to me, according to Rabbi Weiss, Shlita, although he holds that it's an Issa D'Oraisa to create a circuit, presumably to undo the circuit, presumably would not be a D'Oraisa. Most authorities seem to be disagree with both Chazon Ish and Rabbi Asher Weiss and say that the whole idea of electric circuits is only with the Rabbana. With Rabbana, why? Well, a kind of tikkun mana. You might call it a makah b'patish, the Rabbana. And some say it's called a molid. If you look in the Sefer Pisket Shuvas, some of Reish Ayin Zayin, the footnote 33 and 34, he discusses these possibilities. That being the case, it's arguable that there's a greater leniency in disarming than in arming. Arming, according to some authorities, you run into a daraisa. Disarming, it's true only according to the Chazon Ish, perhaps, not according to those who say it's makah b'patish. There may not be any iser, mikiradim, or molid, any ikar mikiradim, any iser mikiradim if you're undoing it. So b'shas ha-tragoro, we might argue that although we certainly prohibit any kind of putting on or off electric circuitry, even if it's not bona, and it's not sosa, and it's not makah b'patish, and it's not molded, we use a overriding category called uvda d'chol, a catch-all, and I believe it certainly would be an uvda d'chol problem. But perhaps in a Shas HaTzchak Godol, if someone's doing this, what we call Bitzina, when no one is looking, maybe undoing is less than doing, as I said earlier. That's the maneuver of the Dachol. It's a Zilzul B'Shabbos, yes, which is maybe more serious than some of the possible actual prohibitions. If it's done Bitzina, when no one is looking, perhaps is room to be lenient if you do it B'Shinut, which would mean if he has to, he can never arm it. No, that's not allowed. But to disarm it, which means either on the inside when no one is looking before he wants to leave the house, or if you walk in and you have within 60 seconds to disarm when no one's looking, B'Shinui, maybe B'Shas HaTzchakot will be allowed. But that's about as far as we can go, only as a maybe. Question 2. I'm asking regarding relying on 2 opinions in Halachas of Erevin. The community of Isa Verda, San Juan, Puerto Rico, was new and growing. The community is centered around the Chabad Shul. Those who cannot reach the Shul on Shabbos are effectively cut off from the community on Shabbos. The municipality has ignored our request to put up an Erev, and although we obtained a Tzivus Rishus, we are not able to get permits for any construction. With just Lechis, I guess that construction they allow, we have enclosed an area that is Rov Amud that includes the entire community. However, this relies on the use of the water line at the fourth wall and the use of a single tourist at Pesach that goes over Rishus HaYochad for a bit. I'm wondering if, given the difficult circumstance and the importance of an area in the community, may we rely on one or both of those above opinions to carry on Shabbos? Let's make something very clear. I believe you can rely on the Mekilim who say that the fact that it goes over a Rishus HaYochad is not a problem. There are many Pesukim that make on that Shaila. But Rov Omid is not enough. Omid Meruba Laparetz works with Daraisa. But on level of Darabonon, you have to enclose everything. Only a Pirza, only a gap of 10 Amos or less is okay. It's about 18 feet. So therefore, if that's what was meant, that the on 3 sides is totally enclosed, and any gaps are less than 10 amos, then is what to talk about. The fourth wall, with the water, that's a whole discussion. There's a Chivas Maharit, Chelek Aleph Simen Tzadi Dalet, who expresses leniency with respect to the fourth wall on the grounds that we have a rule in Ilchus Shabbos, if something is what we call a mavoi, an alleyway, then the fourth side, it's enough to have what we call a heker, which is a korah. And he claims that water is an equivalent or even greater heker than a korah. So, it seems to das yachid, but at least it's something worth to rely upon. Apparently, the Chedushi Arim in the Tshuva Orachayim Simandalad actually relied upon this, as the Marit apparently relied upon in Constantinople. We're talking now about the 16th century, the Chiddush Arim relied upon this Marit in Poland in the 19th century. So it seemed from his tshuva. So although it's difficult to rely upon it, if the rabbi there feels or the community feels there's no alternative, there's at least some shita to rely upon in these pressing circumstances. 3. When the shul is davening mincha and ma'ariv at shkia, what is supposed to not be before shkia? Baruch Hu Kriyas Shema L'Shmoneh Esrei. Seems to me you have to wait even for Baruch Hu for the shkia. And my logic is as follows. The whole idea of davening before Zman Kriyas Shema, which is Teisa Kochavim, is because Birchas Kriyas Shema is viewed as part of Tefillah. Tefillah, if you look carefully in the Mordechai Masechta Brachos, get a clear impression based on the Mishnah Tefillah Se'erev Ein Lo Keva, which the Gemara says it means it's Tefillah Se'erev Shushus. But the simple meaning, as Rabbeinu Yonah implies, is that there's no set time. You can daven ma'ariv any time, which is not Zman Mincha, not Zman Shachris. So therefore, the minute Zman Mincha is over, it starts by definition Zman Ma'ariv. If you assume that Zman Mincha is over at sunset, which is the way we assume, as soon as the sun sets, automatically starts Zman Ma'ariv. But Zman Krishna Rebbe Meir actually even later. So the defense of the position to daven Ma'ariv right after Shkia is that the Birchas Krishma are part of Tfilah. And as such, you can have the Zman of Tfilah. And the Zman of Tfilah begins at Shkia. Seems to me, therefore, you should wait till Shkia, not just for Shmon Esrei, but even for Baruch Hu and Birchas Krishma. Question 4. Last week, or last time, I answered a divorced wife, Lo Saman al Dam Reyecha, is required to respond to inquiries by the former husband who suffered from addictions and was disloyal to her during their marriage. But I added, cleanse yourself if you have some hatred towards the ex before you respond. Does that mean she cannot rid herself of all of her hatred? She should not say anything, which could lead to another broken marriage? Chavos Chaim has 7 conditions. So then, how can the wife ever say anything? And how can the Bezdin say anything? Last, what is the source of the Chavos Chaim 7 conditions, a pastor in the Talmud, or based upon his intuition? So this is a very complex question, and the only way to address it is to start from the end and to discuss the Chafetz Chaim's position in general and his sources in general. Okay. Chafetz Chaim's sources are often Psukim in Tanakh, Agodas of the Shas, of the Medrash, and until the Chafetz Chaim wrote his Sefer, most individuals viewed these areas of halacha, such as Rechilus and Lashon Hara, notwithstanding the fact that Pesukim Mefurashim, Oselech Rochel Ba'amecha, Pesukim Mefurashim, Pashas Kedoshim, they viewed it as fundamentally a matter of Musar. There are many things in the Torah which the Torah considers to be wrong, but not to the same extent as you can't eat chazer. Eating chazer is an absolute prohibition. It's nothing to do with Musar. But Lashon Hara Rechilus was considered part of Musar. The primary source of the Chavos Chaim is Shari Chuvah Rabbi Yona. You can look on any base medrash, you'll find that in the Musar section. Truthfully, you find Chasev Chavos Chaim also in the Musar section, certainly in our base medrash. And it seems there were some people who may have not been happy with the Sefer Chafetz Chaim when it was written, because you were taking matters which are of a more general nature and trying to write specific halachas as you would in the Mishnah Berurah or in the Yoredeya, which some felt was not appropriate. Not appropriate. It all depends on the circumstances. And you can't get every single circumstance written in a sefer. There's an interesting piece by a very fine scholar known as Benjamin Brown. He's an academic from Eretz Yisrael, and he wrote an article on exactly this topic. I believe it was in Dine Yisrael back in Tovshin Samaches. I thank Rabbi Shapiro from the library for giving me some of these marmakomas. And there he is it's entitled that the Chafetz Chaim changed things from principles to rules and from Musar to Halacha. If you go back to the original understanding, Musar, you have to go back to the overriding principle of all Musar, all Benam L'Chaveru, which is, V'yahavta L'Reacha Kamocha, Zeh Klal Golo B'Torah. Or as the Gemara phrases it, Madasani Alach L'Chavach L'Savet. You wouldn't want someone to do it to you. You may not do it to anybody else. And therefore, as the Arachayim HaKadosh says in Parshas Kedoshim, the juxtaposition of two psukim, Lo Selech Rochel Ba'amecha, true. Next phrase, but, says Arachayim, Lo Sabon Adam Reyecha. You're not allowed to be silent if it's going to cause damage to your friend. Not only are you permitted, you're actually required to say something. In the Sefer Pischei Tshuva to Orach Chaim, it's a separate Sefer, in Simen Kuf Nun Vav, says people are screaming and yelling about Lashon Hara. True, but I scream even louder about the other problem. which is lo sam al dam reyacha. People are afraid to say anything. They say nothing. And another person is harmed the same way as they're harmed, which is a violation of lo sam al dam reyacha. So it's a very serious matter that we're discussing over here. And I'll give you a number of the contemporary halachists who have spoken about it. One is Rav Eliezer Melamed in an article which is printed in his name in a publication called Basheva some years back, which he tries to understand the seven conditions of the Chofetz Chaim. He says, if you take the seven conditions literally, it's a big problem, a major problem. One of the conditions is you have to know yourself. If it's just a rumor, then you should say nothing. He gives an example. He says, in his words, Reuven asked Shimon, should I do business with Nimrod? Picks the name advisedly. Shimon knows nothing for sure, but his three partners of Nimrod ended up with concrete boots at the bottom of the river. And, you know, hey, so what should he do? What should he do? If he says something, he's violating most of the seven conditions. It's not for sure. He didn't try to tell Nimrod to be a good boy. You mean to say he should say nothing so that Reuven should also be killed? Or Nimrod had three partners in business who were very wealthy, and when they became involved in Nimrod, they all went broke. And each time Nimrod got richer. There's a rumor that Nimrod fooled them, got them into legal trouble, and took all their money. And he says, you know, listen, be quiet, because Nimrod promised them to pay them off. I don't know if it's true. So it should now, so Reuven should also go broke? Or, third and final, relative to our discussion, Reuven asked Shimon, he has his daughter, and should she have a shidduch with Levi. Shimon thinks that Levi is a crook, a mushkas, controlling very, very bad person. Problem is, perhaps for this reason, he hates Levi. According to the fifth condition, that we're discussing today, if you hate him, you can't say anything. Do you mean that Shimon should be quiet and let Reuven's daughter have her life destroyed? It can't be, argues Rav Eliezer Melamed. So there's an overriding condition, which is toeles. And if you're talking about a significant danger to another individual, even if the seven conditions are not fulfilled, you have to save the person from damage. So writes Rav Eliezer Melamed. He's become recently a little more controversial. I'm not going to get into that right now. But I found very similar sentiments in other Svarim as well of contemporaries. In particular, there was a beautiful article by Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon Shalita, one of the great Rabbonim of Eretz Yisrael. And he says like this, that the Rambam tells us that if someone didn't tell his friend that people are trying to plot against him, he is over al osam al dam reyecha. Quoting the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, Pitzchei Tshuva, the Chofetz Chaim himself said so. So according to the Chofetz Chaim, there's a prohibition, need kavona tahora, to be matirit. Others disagree completely and say, no, if it's the toelis, there's no issue whatsoever. And ain't shirat kavana. You don't have to have a kavana. Even the Chofetz Chaim, about the first condition that you have to know for a fact, says himself in certain limited cases, you have to tell the fellow that I heard this rumor. I can't guarantee this is true. So there's a famous rule in the Gemara Masech Tanida, that Samach Aleph Amad Aleph, Lemecha Shmi Boi. The person not allowed to be makabel the lashon hara, but he has a responsibility to guard himself. And the person who did not do that was Gedaliah ben Achikam, who was warned he's going to be killed, and he didn't pay attention, and he was killed. Chazal is not going to blame the victim. Obviously, the murderer is to blame, but the victim should have protected himself. It's a beautiful book by my esteemed colleague, Rabbi Daniel Feldman. I believe it's called False Facts and True Rumors, all about these matters. And he quotes another sefer called Tochachas Chaim. Never heard of it. Rav Gershon Robinson. An entire sefer. I have the sefer in front of me now. An entire sefer. The Inyan Lashon Hara LaToelos. It's now over 100 pages. This is proof that the Chofetz Chaim is right. And those who argue with him are wrong. Now, what's it all about? So before I say what the sefer says, I got to tell you about the Haskama to the sefer. Haskama is written by a man named Rav Sraya Dablitsky, Zecher Tzadik V'Kodesh Levracha, a very godel b'Torah of the era from Bnei Brak. And after reading the whole book of 100 pages, he said, you know, wait a minute. Because a person cannot eliminate the sin from his heart, he should not be quiet. No. It's a Toelis Achrini. Someone else is going to be hurt otherwise. Then, Lo Sam Adam Rayacha, you can't be Machmir, because you may be going to get involved in a problem, you'll have some sin on your heart. No. Someone says so. You can't. You can't pass in that way. You should learn the conditions and sure, do the best you can to get rid of the sinner from your heart and make sure you're not in violation of Lo Sam Adam Rayacha. So he writes, and in case you nebuch, you still have a little sin, or you didn't fulfill all the conditions, or nin the Torah Malachi Asharis, do the best you can. He quotes other examples of this, and therefore, you absolutely must, you should try as much as you can to keep all the seven conditions of the Chofetz Chaim, but if you can't, Hashem will forgive you, because you're saving the other person from terrible damage. This is what's written in the Haskama of Rav Sraya Dablitsky, which is really not a Haskama so much of a warning that don't listen to everything which is written in the Sefer. As we shall see, he quotes another Sefer called Mishpatei HaShalom by Rav Yitzchok Silver, who says, listen, I'll give you the quotation, it's in page 262 and 3 of this beautiful Sefer. And there he says, you know, if you talk about an urgent and immediate potential danger, then you have to say something. And they say, even the Chofetz Chaim would agree, Lo Sam Al Dam Rayecha, do the best you can before you say anything. And if you have a little sin mixed in, or Nit Natal Malachi Asharis, same words. This is a very important, you know. In general terms, you should, you know, be quiet. But if you save some of them from the immediate being stolen or hurt, or shidduch, or partnership, you have to say something. This is what he says. Okay, this is what these two svarim say about this very weighty topic. And I found, even in the Sefer Tochachas Chaim, over 100 pages, simply to prove that the Chofetz Chaim is right, the following things. Number one, he brings a proof to the Chofetz Chaim from the Sma in Siman Tov Chuf Aleph, Tov Chuf Aleph Sitkotn Chuf Ches. What happens? Reuben's running after Shimon. Wants to hurt him. And Levi hates Reuben. So if Levi hates Reuben, so maybe he shouldn't do anything. So the Taz disagrees. Are you kidding? The mitzvah to save Shimon. The chibek kavana tell him milsa. Depends on his kavana. He has to save Shimon. Doesn't matter. He hates Reuben. He has to hit Reuben to stop him from hitting Shimon no matter what. But he says the tochachas can be followed. The sma against the taz. Seems to me that hitting someone, that's an Easter gomer. Hitting someone, but Rechilus is less than that. It's a kind of Easter, a Musar Easter. That's why it's not the same as Easturi Hana. On page 100, he said talk about Easturi Hana. It's called a sugya mesach the psochim, a psikresha. But even he, even the Tochachas Chaim, who is the biggest machmir, says the distinction I just made for you between eating chazer and Lashon Hara, or Rechilus. Because only the Rason Lehanos is Aser. And he's an Onos. And if he can't help it, he can't get rid of the Sinah. There's no Lav, even though at the end of the day, he has a little bit of Hanok because he hates him. He's Chayav to say something. He must. The Mishpatei Shalom quotes the Tengemar Pesach, Lo Efshav Ekom Achavim, Sugim Perek Kol Shoh. And he says, even according to the Chofetz Chaim, you have to say something. And if a little bit of sinner gets mixed in, lo nitna Torah l'malachi asharis. It's all, even according to the Tzad, that there is a prohibition and that you have to somehow undo it. According to the other Tzad, which is quoted by Rabbi Shimon and others, there's no Easter whatsoever in the case of Toelis. Bottom line is, after all this research, it seems to me that the individual must do his or her best to eliminate any vestige of sinner from his or her heart. But if it's impossible to do that, he or she is obligated to say what has to be said, again, keeping the other conditions of the Chofetz Chaim in mind. Okay, question 5. Would a pap smear render a woman a needle if there is dam? Is she obligated to ask if there is dam? Would it make a difference if it's close to the Yom HaChodesh, or Beinonis, Chodesh, etc.? Now, the pap smear is called a makash yadua shemotzi dam. We know it causes bleeding. And we have a rule that we are allowed to attribute the dam to this kind of a makra. And it seems to me, from what I've heard from doctors, that the next day or two, after this pap smear, we can also assume there may be some vestige of the dam from that wound, whatever the doctor says. This is permissible, even if it's close to the time when her period is expected. Obviously, from the day of the vessus, when her period is expected and she's required to separate from her husband, she should do so, notwithstanding the pap smear. You can't use it as an excuse not to separate at the time of the vessus, and assuming the vessus will come as normal, so from that point on, she'll obviously be prohibited. In the time when she's vessus comes and she hasn't experienced a period yet, she's not a full nida, relations are prohibited, but the fact that she had the pap smear and she's had a little bit staining would not make her an absolute nida at that point in time. Question 6. If dam from the uterus was dam maka, is the woman tame? Is there a dam on the mucus plug? Is the woman a nida? Mucus plug does not make a woman a nida because that's outside the uterus. It's from the uterus. In principle, the answer is no, because it's blood from a wound, not from the lining, which waxes and wanes during the month. Some say that if you take the blood, which would come out when her time of her period, you take it out earlier, some say it does create a problem if it's taken out with a maka, with a scratch, or something of this nature. That's a fight between the poskim. So what I tell people is, listen, why should we have to decide who's right? If a woman has some kind of a procedure, what she should try to do is make sure that she doesn't see anything which is problematic, which means make sure that the whatever blood comes out is seen only on either colored material or not makabel tumah material. And then even if you were going to view it as nam nida, which most people do not, still the room to be lenient. Now, it also depends to some extent on what kind of woman we're talking about. If she's a postmenopausal, there's much more room to be lenient because the blood is not coming from the waxing and waning, and because there is no waxing, nothing comes out every month. So, too, the closer she is to when she went to the mikveh, there's also a little bit more room to be lenient because it takes a while for the blood that shed a little while, let's say 12 days ago, so it actually becomes much more substantial 2 or 3 weeks later, and therefore there's more reason to be somewhat lenient in those cases. But every time she asks a shout because it's complicated. If a woman has having contractions, this is question number 7, and then stops, is she tummy? No, we assume that she's not tummy. 8, we now have 2 available on Yud Beis Chodesh. If you have enough people to split into 2 minyanim, is it better to split up so each Evel can down for the Yomim? Would have 1 large minion. Is the halacha different from Maariv on Motzei Shabbos? Motzei Shabbos is no different than any other day. Maybe more complicated because more people are there. Maybe other nights you have 2-3 minyanim every night. Most of Shabbos, there's usually 1 minyan. That's true. But in principle, there's no difference. And in principle, 1 minyan is better. Rovam Hadras Melech. In some shuls, they have a custom, whenever there's a 2 chiyuvim, they split into 2 to be able to make peace. And if that's their custom, that's their custom. But the preferred custom is not to split up. You know, you can have shuls without their split up into 7 minyanim, because there's 7 chiyuvim. It's not really ideal. But of course, shalom is very important, so every rav and kiel has to decide how they want to handle it, but at least in principle, better to have 1 minyan. 9. If one's family is invited over to eat a Shabbos meal, is it preferable for to be yotze with the kiddush of the Baal HaBayis, or to make kiddush for one's own family? Well, there's a whole discussion in general terms of how many times you say kiddush, even if there's no guests, even if it's just a plain old family. We know very well that by chassidim, everyone makes kiddush in the house. The father, the son, I think that's how I grew up, if I'm not mistaken. Everyone made kiddush. I'm trying to remember how my kids grew up. I don't remember anymore. That was just, when I grew up, that's how it was. Even though ideally, Provam Hadras Melech, I guess they wanted to train you to make kiddush on your own. So I assume the assumption of this question is that typically this family does not have everyone make kiddush, only the balabas makes kiddush. And then the question becomes, what about if there's more than one balabas at the table? So there again, it's a choice. In principle, it's better that there be only one kiddush. But very frequently, a balabas makes his own kiddush, and for his wife and family, even though there's another balabas, the main balabas, making for his wife, his family, and maybe other families, he wants to make his own kiddush. That certainly is a legitimate option. What if 2 single men who are eating together? It's the same thing. They can ideally one should make for the other, but if they have a custom to make it separately, one cannot say that it's wrong. 10. One has to make the birchas haTorah before listening to a recorded shiur during his drive to shul in the morning. Shlomo Zalman talks about it in Perek Vav Sifei of Halicha Shlomo. He's not sure. Why is he not sure? Based on the Torah in Brachos of Chaf, even though the Shulchan Aruch says that if you think Divrei Torah, you're not chayv in Birchas HaTorah, but if you hear Divrei Torah, then we do say Hiru Kedibur, based on Har Sinai, and therefore you would have to make the Birchas HaTorah. Shlomo Zalman is just not sure. That's only if you hear from a live person speaking in real time, not from a tape. He's not sure. So the Piskei Tshuvah quotes this in Simon Mem Zayin, footnote 59, said, you know what? There's a Gerah. The Gerah says you have to make a bracha even if you just think Divrei Torah. Certainly if you hear Divrei Torah, the best thing to do would be to make a Birchas HaTorah in the morning before you go into the car and solve the problem. Just say Yivarecha, 3 Psukim, you know, and Elu Dvarim. That would be the better way to handle it. Number 11. Shulchan Aruch 25:2 seems to say that one should put his tefillin before entering the shul sanctuary. Why does it seem that many do not follow this? Is there justification for it? Everything being equal, where should one put on his tefillin? So the source of this din, it's true, it's in the Shulchan Aruch, comes from the Zohar. Things that come from the Zohar are considered non-mandatory. By definition, it's called sod. You're not even required to know about it. So it's not required to keep it. The Mishnah Berurah in Sifkot and Ches says if you're walking through the street and they're going in the street, then you shouldn't put on the tefillin in the street. Yes, it's better to put it on in the outer chotzer yard of the shul. Sometimes it's not so convenient to do that. And therefore, many, many people just put it on in shul. That's what I do. That's how I was brought up. Then maybe there wasn't such a possibility of an outdoor place. You're walking through the street right into the shul. And to do it outside is a little bit inconvenient. Again, those who do it outside, and either in the house or in the ante room, that's fulfilling the Zohar, but it's not absolutely mandatory. Question 12. One's allowed to brush your teeth with Shabbos with a dry toothbrush. Correct. One's allowed to rinse their mouth out first with water and then brush. Must one set aside a toothbrush for use exclusively on Shabbos? When allowed to wash up the toothbrush after the finishes brushing. So the first question, I believe, is okay. You can rinse your mouth, but you got to, you know, make sure as much of the water that you use to rinse goes out. before you put the, over the sink, you put it in and spit it out. Then there's a little liquid left in your mouth. No, there's liquid in your mouth even if you didn't rinse with the water, because there's certain saliva in your mouth. That should be okay. I do not think you should need a separate toothbrush, and I do not think you should wash off the toothbrush, because it's a question of hachana for Motzei Shabbos. I guess if you brush your teeth both Friday night and Shabbos morning, so you can rinse it off Friday night for Shabbos morning, but not Shabbos morning for Motzei Shabbos. 13. Is it necessary or preferable to make Kiddush again at home if you already heard it and were Yotzi in Shul? So our meaning is to follow the Shulchan Aruch, who says that you can fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush B'Makom Suda with mizonos, with cookies, with cake, with lakshon kugel, things of this nature. And therefore, there's no need, if everyone around the table has already fulfilled the Kiddush B'Makom Suda in Shul, they all have cookies, no need to make Kiddush again. And therefore, in my house, I don't make Kiddush again. Having said that, my Rebbe of Soloveitchik said you should better make Kiddush again. His logic was that the Vilna Gaon says Kiddush B'Makom Suda is only challah, not cookies. So even if we're willing to not follow the Vilna Gaon to the end, because according to him, you wouldn't be allowed to even eat at the Kiddush, because it's not Kiddush B'Makom Suda. So for that, we'll rely on the majority view, that you can make Kiddush in the shul and eat cookies. After all, some say there's no prohibition, Kiddush Rabbah, to eat before the Makom Suda. They don't need Kiddush Makom Suda. Many tzirufim. But to play it safe, when you come home, you should make Kiddush again just before you have the challah. So on the Piskei Tshuvah, you think it's that way, even according to those who don't follow the Vilna Gaon, it's better to have a Kiddush just before the main meal, even if you already heard Kiddush and Shul, when you had what we call a Kiddush, which is the cookies. So those who do that, but it's not necessary according to strict halach. 14. So as it happens, I make Kiddush at home and eat some cake, unsure when the company will show up. Just they finish, they come over. We're ready to start the regular Suda. Should I make ala mikya, ala geffen first, or just go straight into the meal? The minig is go straight into the meal. Why? Because the Kiddush is part of the meal. It's all one hemshech. And some say that the boring min mezonos you made on the cookies before the meal is necessary to potter the cookies you may have at the end of the meal. Look at the Piskei Tshuvah, Simen Kuf Ayin Vav, Sif Aleph, based on the Mishnah Berurah, Sif Katan Beis, and other poskim. So he seems to say the better way is to simply be yotzi everything with the benching at the end, and not make a bracha at that point in time. By the way, the Magen Avraham says it's not such a good idea to have so much food before you have the main meal. You won't be as hungry. If you're in shul, you want to participate in a kiddush. So, you have what you eat. Don't eat too much. You have to go home. What the Ashes Chayal cooked, if you come home and you have no appetite, that's not good even for your Shalom Bayis. But okay, you have something to eat at the Kiddush because you want to participate in the Simcha, whether it be a mitzvah, whether it be an offer for a Kiddush for a baby girl or some other Suda Sodaya, as we would like to call them. And then you'll go home and you can, eat Kedakcha. But when you're in your own house and you make Kiddush, so even though there is a custom to have cake before you have the bread, it's not a perfect custom. Better go straight to the bread, save the cake for dessert. It's probably healthier that way as well. 15. When's the latest time to start Shalosh Shudas? Is there any wiggle room after Shkia? Must one just make the bracha by that time, or must one eat a kazayis by that time? Good question. It's better to eat a kazayis before the Shkia. This way it's permissible to continue after the Shkia. It's one long meal. What happens if you ate nothing before the Shkia? The Mishnah Berurah in Siman Reish Tzadi Tes Sivkot and Aleph and the Bialocha, end of the paragraph Mishnah Techshach, is Mekil, like relying upon the Balamor. The Balamor said that you're allowed to eat in Bein HaShemoshes. There's no need to eat before Avdolah. It's not time for Avdolah yet. And he throws in Rav Yossi, who holds that Ben Hashmash only starts at Tzeit Kochavim. And the Shara Tzion and Sifkon Beis as well. A Suffolk Mitzvah and Seder Rabbanim of Shalosh Shudas is Docha, the Suffolk Eastern Rabbanim of Yenim before Abdullah. And that's the Minig. So again, it is the Minig. The Taz says that way, and many hold that way. But ideally, one should not rely upon this Taz. One should make sure to not only wash and make a moti before sunset, but try to have a kazayis before sunset. This way, it's certainly permissible to continue eating after sunset as well. 16. Past Shabbos afternoon, Mincha we did not have a kohen. The Gabbai called up, he saw them come kohen. Before he saw the bracha, kohen walks in. What do you do? He did in Shulchan Aruch, Simon Kuf Lamed Hei Sivav. The kohen goes up to get the aliyah. The Yisrael stands there and gets called up for Shlishi. That's the best way to do it. 17. Is there any issue with reading books of the Apocryphal, such as the book of Maccabees, Ben Sira, Josephus, etc.? This is found in a beautiful collection called Mar'ei HaBazak, put out by Eretz Chemda. There are many volumes out, Baruch Hashem. The first volume, page 47, they quote a Gemara, Sanhedrin, the Daf Kuf Mebeis. It's an Easter of Sfarim Chitzonim, found in the Mishnah of Tzadiyim and Aleph. But according to the Rambam, in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Peg Beis, Alecha Beis, and the Ramah, Sim Yoradeh, Sim Rech, Mevav, Sim Dalet, they claim that these Sfarim Chitzonim are only Sfarim which contain in them Minus or Avodah Zarah, which we should not be looking at. But the fact that they are part of the Apocrypha, were not canonized in the Tanakh, does not make them automatically off-limits. Ben Sira, as a matter of fact, is quoted in the Gemara. And in Sanhedrin, that same daf, Daf Kuf, the Gemara quotes a few places. If you look at Tosfos in Erev and Samechem and Aleph, they tell you places where Ben Sira is quoted in Shas. Yeah, the good parts of Ben Sira, maybe other not such good parts. And as far as Maccabim, Sefer Maccabim, so they explain that there's a Maccabim Aleph and a Maccabim Beis. The Maccabim Aleph is a proper source for history, and apparently, even in the Bahalachas Gedolos, in Hilchos Sofrim, he quotes Megillas HaChashmonoi, which presumably means that. But the Maccabim Beis, written by the Hellenists, you should start to stay away from that. Question number 18. Is it mutter to reconnect the hook attached to the chain that slipped off the flushing arm in the toilet tank on Shabbos in order for the said toilet to work normally? Would there be a difference if this is the first time it has occurred? I understand that it is a somewhat regular occurrence. It's not a problem to reconnect. Is that true? If forbidden, is it bona d'oraisa? Well, this question is discussed in two of the contemporary Svarim, one by Rabbi Falk from Geita Zichron Levracha, called Pia Pascha, and one the famous Sefer Lamates Melachos by our family's Mechutin, Rabbi Riviat Shlita. They both say you should not do it. Is it a d'oraisa? I'm not willing to venture, but it should not be done. And if, for those who don't know, the toilet can be operated even without reconnected. To just open up the top and just pull the lever, which would have been pulled by the chain, and pull with your hand. It works just as well. 19. If someone will be traveling for an entire night during Hanukkah, is there any way for them to fill the mitzvah of Neres Hanukkah? Can they ask someone to come and light in their house while they're away? We'll do that a bracha. That's the answer. Someone has to come into their house and light. As far as a bracha, the best way to do it, get it next door neighbor. The next door neighbor should light the candles in his own house. You set up the candles for him in advance. So he goes from his house straight to your house and lights the candles in your house based upon the bracha he made in his house without having to make a new bracha, which is a possible shaila. 20. At a public menorah lighting, can I make the bracha out loud and have someone else light the menorah even if they will not say the bracha along with me properly? Well, if someone is being yotzei the chiyuv with a hadlaka, then there's not even a need for the person to say anything. Shomei kohen, you make the bracha, they hear it, and then they light the candles, so no problem. The issue is, according to most authorities, in general, one should not be making a bracha on a public menorah lighting. Look at the Piskei Tshuva, Siman Tov, Resh, Ayin, Aleph, footnote 118. Who says it? Shlomo Zalman and Rav Yosher and Rav Sternberg and Dayan Weiss and Chassid Tzvok and the Shevet Alevi. They all say that it should not be done. Now I know that some groups do it. We're not here to argue with them. But the consensus view is that it should not be done. Only in a shul, but not in any other public menorah lighting. 21. What are the guidelines for participating in Jewish communal organizations with non-Orthodox shuls and organizations? That's a very tough question. And it depends in large measure on particular circumstances. My Rebbe of Soloveitchik, Zichron and Levracha, said both relating to these kinds of groups, non-Orthodox, he said you should really stay away from them. I think the example that he gave, it's written in the 50s, was he said, you know, you can't have the communists, in those days they were the arch enemies of America, the communists cannot be given a seat at the Republic National Convention, you know, the Republican Party. That was a mushroom that he gave. Now these people who are, he said, could you imagine a convocation of Rabbanim of the Purushim and the Tzedukim? Unthinkable. And the non-Orthodox, he thinks, are worse than the Tzedukim. So he was very much opposed to any kind of a group which discussed religion, because it's impossible. He called that Klape Pnim, facing inward, discussions of religion. However, he made an exception, what he called Klape Chutz, facing outward threats, anti-Semitism, for example, getting together with non-Orthodox to, you know, protest the terrible anti-Semitism, which those who are on the news know is happening this week and last week by personalities who should know better. And I just saw that thousands of rabbis distanced themselves from a particular politician over his association with a terrible anti-Semite. Not going into that now. But if you have a group that's combating anti-Semitism, like, I don't know, the B'nai B'rith Anti-Defamation League, they're including, obviously, many non-Orthodox people. So that's not discussing religion. They're discussing anti-Semitism just to keep us safe. I think Merebi said the same thing when it came to the Soviet Jewry movement, that he's trying to get the Jews out of Russia. So it's all Kalapi Chutz. So, Kalapi Chutz to stop anti-Semitic politicians or despots or other threats to safety of Am Yisrael, then that's Kalapi Chutz. Then you can sit with anybody. You can sit even with non-Jews. You're just trying to prevent threats from without. But when it comes to internal matters, Klape Pnim, he felt it was inappropriate to become part of these groups. Now, the question was asked about Jewish communal organizations. You can't answer that question in one second. What's the nature of the organization? If it's Klape Chutz, it's for sure okay. Klape Pnim, it's for sure not okay, according to my Rebbe. Of course, the problem is many of the organizations, it's a mixture. It's a mixture. A little of this, a little of that. That requires a decision by every local Rav, whether it's Yotzer, Schar, Befeda, or the reverse. And I can't answer that in detail because every circumstance is somewhat different. Question number 22. Can I serve fish and meat at the same kiddush if I know my congregants will likely use the same plate? I announce that people should not use the same plate. Is the Mogen Avraham that Shtakon does not apply today a reason to be makel? Absolutely a reason to be makel. The Mogen Avraham says that fish and meat used to be dangerous, is no longer dangerous. Even though we can still have a custom, we use separate forks and separate plates. That's not required, strictly speaking. It's just keeping up the old menhagim. So there's no need to stop fish and meat from being served at the same kiddush. 23. This past Shabbos, 3 days after the Moed in Yerushalayim, was 10 p.m. The question was whether to go by Yerushalayim time or local time, say this past Moshi Shabbos. B, a bar mitzvah boy who will be bar mitzvah before the end of the Kiddush Levana for the month, should he wait until he's bar mitzvah or do the mitzvah, or do it right away? The first A is a big machlokes in the postgame, and it seems to me it's better to wait. Why take a chance? In our shul, we did not do Kiddush Havana last Motzei Shabbos. We hope to get it this Motzei Shabbos. Taking a chance a little bit. This Motzei Shabbos will be, you know, later in the month, and it's somewhere there are clouds. But, you know, Rosh Chodesh was, let's see, what was Rosh Chodesh? Tuesday and Wednesday, I think, something like that. It was Thursday and Friday, Rosh Chodesh. So we have until the following Wednesday, probably, for Solos Mai Kiddush Levana. So we can take a chance at this Motzei Shabbos, hope it'll be a clear night. Bar Mitzvah boy, I think, should wait as well, till after his Bar Mitzvah. 24, finally. A Shomer Shabbos company has many paid subscribers as members to manage their memberships. The company has an auto-renewal feature that automatically sends out e-bills and renewals. Sometimes they go out on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Can a Jewish company have such a feature? Is it Chil Shabbos Yom Tov? B. Some members have their credit card / bank information on the file, so the auto renewal takes place immediately. Some years on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Are they allowed to leave their credit card bank information if it will take place on Shabbos and Yom Tov? Will it make a difference if it is Jewish owned or not? So let's set the record straight. If you don't do any actions, it cannot be an absolute violation of Shabbos and Yom Tov. Lama test malacha lo sasa kol malacha. If you're doing nothing, things that happen by computer, automatically, it cannot possibly be a violation of malacha b'Shabbos. Can't be. Is it something which is a zilzul in Shabbos? Possibly. Are you misayeya chilul Shabbos on the other side? Possibly. So if I have a company and the other side is a Jewish customer, they are going to do something on Shabbos, it would be a potential problem. Even if nothing is done on Shabbos, you might run afoul of Biki Vega. Biki Vega suggested that the Easter of Mecha Chumemka B'Shabbos can be violated even if you do nothing on Shabbos, as long as it takes effect on Shabbos. It's a long discussion with them. Are you a Shalmi and Yuma with Kedushin of a Kohen Gadol? It's complicated. Sugya. Some agree with Biki Vega. Some disagree. I was told, don't know if it's still true, that on Shabbos, these credit cards transactions that we're discussing over here do not actually take full effect until Monday morning. So they're closed over the weekend, and although your order is already in, the finalization, I was told, is only in banking hours, and I was told not even on Saturday, only on Monday morning. If that's still true, that would mitigate the concern of the Kivega. Of course, on Yom Tov during the week, that would not solve the problem. It seems to me, with putting everything together, we're not required to take extraordinary steps to turn everything upside down if there's a Yom Tov in the middle of the week sometime, based on the lenient views which we spoke about. Obviously, it's not your intention to have something happen on Yom Tov. So if you could just press a button and say, I don't want a thing to happen on Yom Tov, that would be a good idea. But if it's going to be a very complex matter to disconnect and reconnect, I believe it's going to be Mekel, based on what we said until now. Thank you very much.
Rebbe, we thank you very much. And Bezrat Hashem, we hope we can call upon Rebbe again in the near future. Thank you.
Call to. Bye-bye.